June 27th, 2010, it's a Watt from Pedro show. Watt from Pedro show. You just heard Reek by Shitbird. Start off the show with Mr. Knight, John Coltrane. And in between that was a song by our host today, Brother Matt. No, not our host. We're the host, huh? It's our guest from Camarillo. Mr. Peter DiStefano, welcome aboard.
Yeah,
that
welcome.
Was a tune you wrote about Jaco Pastorius being beat
to
death.
Well, yeah, I just...
called Diminished.
Yeah, we... thank you. First of all, I want to say thank you for... It's an honor that you guys invited me on your show.
Nice to have you here.
And I was very excited for this.
Oh, respect.
The song was written... I just, you know, as a bass player, he had different vocabulary than the standard bass players I was listening to, you know, with scales that I'd never heard before. So I looked into it, and I discovered diminished scales, you know. And then also the story of what happened to him with smoking crack and getting beat to death at a bar, you know. It's like his life was diminished, so it sort of worked all together.
Oh, diminished scale, diminished life.
Yeah. Because I was horribly addicted to crack cocaine, too, and heroin, but I just got a break.
It's been many years, though, you've been free.
Yeah, in a few weeks, I'll have 13 years sober.
Awesome. Oh, my dad, oh.
Yeah.
That means congratulations.
Thank you. Respect.
Yeah, absolutely. Some cake.
It's a gift.
Yeah, but you work hard at it.
Yeah, you're
right. Both. And, I kind of know a little bit about that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to start with your music life, because I came in later to your life, even though it's been many years. Maybe, how many? 15?
Gosh, it's been, yeah.
When I started, my time, but let's back up. Let's go when you first was aware of music. How old were you?
Well, it was in my family. My dad, you know.
This is Santa Monica?
Yeah. My dad did Sicilian music, you know, like. Cella luni mezzo mari, mamma mia mi maritare. I giovani ci vai, mamma mia mi maritare. Oh, my, te voglio maritare. He did that kind of stuff at parties every weekend, and I just was the happiest then, you know? And then the rest of life was a nightmare.
How old was this?
I was, you know, 3 years old, 4 years old, and we were doing these parties, and up until I was 13 when I grabbed the guitar, you know, and said, this is it. What?
His guitar?
Yeah, his guitar, and said, this is it. And then, you know, just started selling flowers, whatever I could, to get money to get a guitar, you know? And,
To let go of his.
Yeah, to let go of his and get my own. And
so, you didn't dig you jamming on it?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first song you learned?
Country Roads from John Denver. My sister taught me that. And
She was a musician.
Yeah, my whole family was musical, you know? But I guess I started with just picking up the guitar and just going...
Notes.
As a kid, you know, just hitting one note and putting my finger on another thing, and then trying different cadences, like. And I said, okay, I got something going, and it feels good.
Yeah. And so 13 is when you sold enough flowers to get a guitar?
Yeah. So 13, I took it seriously.
When was that?
That was, I'm 45 now, so.
Last week,
yeah, so. And so, you know, it was, and then something happened.
It was 29
happened.
Years ago.
Yeah. So I just...
1971.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, 1971, I'd be 6 years old, so it was 1976, right? Because that's a little...
But that's 24, no, that's 34 years.
Well, I can't...
You're the math whiz.
I'm a math whiz.
No, okay, so 1970, I was 5. 1975, I was 10.
1978. So I was 2 years out of high school when you got your first guitar.
Yeah.
Great.
And it was a hollow body Hohner or something like that with buttons on it.
I know Hohner.
Yeah.
The Beatle bass.
Yeah. And so it was one of those guitars or something like that. And I just, you know, used to listen to
Elvis
Presley records. No, I didn't have an amp yet.
Okay.
And then I finally got an amp. And then I wanted a guitar like Jimmy Page because I thought Les Pauls were cool. So I bought a cheap Hondo guitar, and it was terrible. Like, the other guitar that I had that looked like an Italian guitar was cooler. It was a better built instrument. And I was so miserable that I, did that.
You mean the Elvis Presley first? You were trying to play with
Elvis Presley was the huge thing for me. Elvis, and then the Beatles, and then Creedence Clearwater Revival. I snapped over Traveling Band, that song. And I just used to pretend with a tennis racket that I was in front of my elementary school. And, and listening to, Peter Frampton and all that stuff.
Well, Jimmy Page, you must have heard some
Led Zeppelin. Oh, yeah, Led Zeppelin changed my life. Went to, I smoked weed and went to The Song Remains the Same midnight showing, and then I got it, and then that was it. And then after that, Hendrix came, and then Hendrix, I've never really gotten over Hendrix.
So you work like listening to records and trying to play the songs on the records.
Yeah, that's it. And then I took lessons, and then I got into Andrew Segovia, the whole classical finger-picking thing.
Yeah.
This kind of trick. That whole picking stuff. And I got really into that.
What about songwriting?
And then songwriting, of course, Jimmy
Don't you like this?
I love it. I love the bikes going by. And
shut the hatch.
Sounds of Pedro.
But, I liked all sorts of music. I got into jazz. I got into classical. And that's why bands like Led Zeppelin, because they had that song, Babe, I'm going to... It has that kind of like
there was a,
finger picking.
What was that band? 10 years after?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to change the world.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that.
Oh, it does? Cool. Mm-hmm. I wonder who was first.
Is it that?
Yeah.
I don't know who was first. Is that Led Zeppelin 3?
Yeah, that's Led Zeppelin 2? 1. That was 1969. Mm-hmm. Babe, I'm going to leave you. Anyway, so that.
Right.
I was like, wow. Because Hendrix had the feedback going and the whole wailing and the screaming emotionally.
Yeah.
But I felt like Jimmy Page had the finger pick, the picking, the classical part of it.
Yeah.
And so I liked the blues and the classical. And then the jazz just destroyed me. And that was, Miles Davis, Coltrane,
Bird. But this
I got into that with you.
When but this is all man. Well, yeah, but don't jump ahead yet.
Okay, all right.
This is you've got this Hondo,
yeah.
And you saw that movie,
yeah.
And but you're man alone, no band.
No, I was into Jimi Hendrix, trying to do it all on my own,
trip. When was your first band?
My first band was actually a band.
Did you start writing
Eric
songs?
Eric Avery on bass,
mm-hmm.
and Sean Sullivan on drums. We didn't have a name. We just went into his garage and we played, I think, Cocaine from Eric Clapton and Sympathy for the Devil.
It felt so good. Was that J.J. Cale?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it felt so good. And then Eric moved on because he got into New Wave and then he became famous in Jane's Addiction. I was like, wow, he made it.
Did you write songs then?
Yeah, I was writing. I started writing songs.
What was the first song you wrote?
This song called Love's Like a Magnet. Anyway, love's like a magnet. Can't you see that I'm attracted to your love? It was like little retarded songs, but they're sincere.
I was
trying to be poetic, so I just at this point
you had a no name garage band.
Yeah,
did you guys ever do gigs?
No, we just practiced twice in the garage, and then Eric quit.
Twice?
Yeah.
That was it?
Yeah. And then Sean and I went out and played a gig. And we played our first gig at a party with a different bass player named Eric Boltz. And I played the whole time with my back towards the audience.
First gig.
Yeah. And then I turned around and then I started singing when the people were cool. And then it was great. And then we got asked to play a second party that same night. So we packed up and we went to another party. And it was all like... It was like... Well, hip-hop wasn't invented in those days, but it was more of like, what's the politically correct way of saying...
Rapping?
Yeah, like, no, not a rapping, but
urban
like...
Urban crowd?
Yeah, just not surfer crowd.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I'm gonna, you know, play us some funk, man. Play us some. You know. So I was like, okay, I'll play a Black Magic Woman or something from Santana. You know, I was just scared, and they started playing, and they just booed us, and we couldn't even get through the song.
Character
and
building.
Sean was crying, the drummer, and it was a disaster. And then I realized, I go, if this is the worst, if that was the best, and this is the worst,
all in the same night,
I can do this. Yeah. I can be booed. It's because I wanted to be a pro surfer, but man, when I would go out there and I'd go, "Mommy, please," and the waves would hit me,
the big wall,
water drowning, you know.
Yeah.
I go, dude, the big wave thing is just too scary. I don't want to die.
Are you still in high school at this point?
No, I was in. Yeah, still in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so then I got in a surf band called K38. We wrote original songs and played surf music, like, you know. And. That was great. I had an 8-year run with that, and we had a good, fun time in Santa Monica and the beach and all that stuff. And then I just started getting really serious, and then I started to want to, you know, write songs like the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin and, you know, tunes with substance. You know, like Monkey Man just floored me, and Can't You Hear Me Knocking, and
Monkey Man,
you know. And then the Germs destroyed me. You know, Pat Smear, I was just like, oh my God, I'm such a pussy in a pussy beach band. I wanted to be tough, you know. So I went through the whole heterosexual trip, you know, trying to be tough.
Yeah.
And then I realized that my heroes, like Jimi Hendrix, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Jimmy Page, Darby Crash, they were all shooting heroin, you know. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to make a deal with the devil. So I went and got a needle and some heroin. Just went for it. Dove into it. I didn't do it because of molestation or problems or a great upbringing. I just wanted to make great music. I thought that was the ticket. That was the crossroads. When Robert Johnson went, they made a deal. He met the fucking dealer at the corner.
At the crossroads.
At the crossroads. He got the dope, the heroin, and did that. And that was going to give him the mojo. I used to sleep with my guitar and pray for the mojo because I would see Led Zeppelin. And I saw technically guitar players that were just had from brain to hand just outstanding
technique.
And got all the notes right and could play Mozart, Beethoven, everything. But there was something about when Keith Richards went, wham, bong, bong, and I just, and the whole place went, yeah. And it was just a couple, you know, there was no, or punk rock's a great example. It just exploded, you know. So it's like, how do you get that power, you know? So I thought it was heroin. And I dove into that. Because, you know, and then I was a huge fan of Perry, and, you know, that Triple X record, that independent record.
Live.
So, yeah, I just heard it, and I was like, oh my God, the mojo's there, he's doing heroin, that's it. So then I started doing it, and the weird thing, Perry picked me as a guitar player, right when I made that decision. So I don't know if it was
he's making
devil.
A new band.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if it was the devil. I don't know what happened, but I just said, I'm going to commit suicide. To get mojo, to get in, to get, I just want in. I don't care. Death is worth it, you know? And that's my story, you know? And then I realized that, you know, you could.
So you started playing with Porno for Pirates.
Yeah, and then I started playing with
Writing
Porno
songs for Pirates.
Writing with songs for Pirates. We did that first record in 2 weeks. You know, I mean, writing, recording, mixing, mastering, everything in 2 weeks. And it was during the riots and that craziness and stuff. And you know, it was a great. Great run, and then in 97.
Well, you did touring. That was one of your first tours, right?
Yeah, my first tours with Porno for Pirates. We did 3 legs of touring, and then, you know, I got to see the world and everything. That was great. And we went gold on the first record. Then we took 2.5 years to make the second record because of so much
crap. Helicopter?
Helicopter at Woodstock, the whole bourgeois thing, you know what I mean? And then I met you. And you have probably been, God, I don't. Maybe I've been hiding it from you, but you've probably been the biggest influence on me since I met you.
Was it 95? 1995?
God, I was on drugs. I don't remember. But it was, no, it was before you were in the band. We went to a party with Dick Rude and Flea and all them. And they go, this is Mike Watt. He's, you know, everybody, all the stars were saying Mike Watt's heavy. And Anthony Kiedis and Flea, they're going, this dude, he's the best. And everyone was saying you were the best. And I was like, that guy looks like a plumber. What do you mean? He's not a rockster, he's a plumber. He's wearing a plumber's shirt. And they go, no, dude, he's the heavy one, not us, not this. And I was just searching for mojo, you know, still, you know. But by then I was hooked already, you know.
Yeah.
And then, so I was gravitated to what everyone was telling me was the shit. And that was Mike Watt. So I went and investigated, and I realized, you know, I'm putting sissy-ass hair dye in my head, and I'm doing, you know, and I just learned a lot, you know, and I'm eating this and a wardrobist and all this shit, you know. And I realized that, you know, I'm traveling with 5 bags of cosmetic, you know, just you know, I was completely down the wrong path.
Early
you
know? Sex referral.
Yeah, whatever, you know. And so I realized, I learned, like, wow, this is, you know, what's important is the music again. You know, the guitar, it's the instrument, you know, doing, you know, searching for the mojo and just forgetting about everything else, making that important. And so, you know, since then, it's just...
Well, Martine had to kind of leave the band.
Yeah, it was all drugs.
And I was jamming with Perk, and yeah. Perk said, hey.
Yeah, let's get Wada. And I was like, yeah, and then we did that record together, we toured, that was great, and we've been doing Hell Ride since.
Yeah.
And
at that time, you guys were living in that house in Zuma.
Yeah, we lived in a house, a 10-bedroom house for 2.5 years. I had a 3-story place in Venice Beach, and I had a 2-story place in the Palisades all at once that we were renting. I didn't buy anything, so I was renting. Any money that I made just went right out the door. You know, it was all spent and blown. And then at the end of it all, I owed Perry like... $150,000 and Warner Brothers $300,000. So I was like, at the end of it, I just had a gnarly junky habit, tons of bills, and then I got cancer and chemotherapy bills, and I was like $1 million in debt and ready to die. And then they started Jane's again, and I went into the hospital to go turn myself in and just, you know, I'm done. You know, let's do chemo, let's do, you know, keep me alive as much as you can, because I had a daughter and a girlfriend at the time. I was like, I want to stay as long as I can to see them before I split. But then I started living, you know, and the chemo worked, and there was, you know, and I was like, man, okay, I got to get back into music. And they were doing Jane's again, so the porno was not available. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start doing solo records. And I've made a solo record every year since. But it took from 1998 to 2004 to make my first solo record because of record companies and marketing and all this shit. And I didn't have the ability, I didn't own a computer, and there wasn't really computers, you know, it didn't kick in, the whole recording by yourself thing. And I didn't have like a sugar daddy to bring me into these big tape machines and get musicians and all that stuff. So I was like, you know, so when the time came in 2004, I was able to get a computer. And then since then on, I've been making the solo record every year. So I have, now I'm going to be working on my 8th, and I make my solo records every October to January. And then in between there, I work on a bunch of other stuff and stuff to make money, you know, Bob De Niro. And then the solo records, I do then. But last night I did a song for the first time in June. Since I've been making solo records for this show.
Let's play it.
You want to play it? It's on that one CD.
I'll play it right now. Okay. What's it called?
Oh, God, I don't know. What's up? What does it say on the CD? I wrote it last night and recorded it and mixed it and mastered it all.
The Wronged Ones.
The Wronged Ones, yeah.
Okay, Wild from Pedro Show.
Yeah.
Thank you. Like dirt, it was okay.
For Pedro Show. Started that off with a 12-hour song written last night. Yeah, 12 hours. You wrote it at 1 in the morning.
Well, I was done at 1 by 1.
The Wronged Ones by Peter DiStefano. And, what was the trip on that?
Well, I just, you know, when you asked me to write the radio show, and then you called me and you said, you know, bring some music. Some music on a CD and a guitar and stuff, and I was like, "Wow, you know, I'd like to give."
Oh, you mean guest on the radio show?
Yeah. I'm sorry, guest. I wanted to write something special for you. You deserve something
very kind.
New and not just like. And plus, I'm not trying to sell anything. I give all my music away for free on PeterDiStefano.org. It's a fan site, and there's a vault, and that's why I do all these other things. Like, I have this partner, Mark Gann, and we have this company called D&G Entertainment, where we produce bands, and we're doing this band called the Dirty River Boys from Texas, and they're just badass. And I do that kind of stuff and film scores and playing on Harry Gregson Williams film scores and stuff. And then my solo music, Peter DiStefano, I want to give away for free and forget the whole label and iTunes and trying to get units and marketing and all that stuff, because I want to make music whenever, you know, every year consistently, like a diary. And plus, it's like my religion, and I don't feel like I should be selling my religion, you know?
That's PeterDiStefano.org.
Yeah, PeterDiStefano.org.
Did I forget the E?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it doesn't, it's whatever. You can just Google my name and find it. But it's all there on that. It's called The Circle, PeterStefanoCircle.org. And it's just a group of 100 or so artists that have their art up there. And then I just put all my whole catalog there for free download.
That's righteous philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I just make money musically other ways, producing, doing stuff, other bands.
And we heard some other music, too. We heard some Jajaka. My crew, they got a new album, and that's got Bingo from 5471 singing with them. Mm. And then Image Game by Light, Lightspan I'm on tour with in October over there. And something they did with John McIntyre in Chicago. And then he told me by the Bungles. Cool. It was Mr. Bungle. I met the bass player in New York City. I was in New York City last week finishing my third opera with Tony Mamone.
Yeah, congratulations on that. I'm excited to hear
it. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But Trevor Dunn came over, and he's bass player. From Mr. Bungle was a band with Mike Patton.
Yeah, he's badass.
And Nels had some there's three gigs in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil.
Oh, cool.
And Devin Hoff had hurt his wrist. So Trevor Dunn filled in for him. Pretty amazing. And, yeah, I was very sweaty over there.
Yeah?
New York City.
Yeah.
Gosh. We are spoiled here. I mean, you know. I was telling Brother Matt. Brother Matt, your first time.
Yeah, I was over there just the other day also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
His first time in New York City.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wow. it's different than here by the water in Pedro, huh? Mm-hmm.
There's water there, but...
Yeah, it's just a different trip.
Total different island life.
I got off the plane, you know, and at nighttime here at Long Beach Airport, and mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, a place where nighttime isn't sweaty. Because I just had 2 weeks of just every night was just almost as hot as a day.
No, it's crazy. We are so lucky for the weather.
We are. But Tony Mamone, he was the bass player for Perubu, a band from the 70s, Cleveland. The big hero. Me and D. Boone saw them play at the Whiskey in 77, do their modern dance. And it blew our minds. It blew our minds. And here, I kind of set up the proj. That's the reason I put together The Missing Man, was all to make this third opera. And the plan was to make it with Tone.
Cool.
You know? When do you get to do something like that? Yeah. All these years later, I would never imagine even meeting him, let alone having him there. I played his bass.
Oh, cool.
67 jazz bass.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's helping me. But I did all the bass because when I was on tour last year, we took 3 days off, stopped in Brooklyn. And at his studio, I had Tom and Raul play the guitar and drums and record just with them and not with me, without bass. Because there's 30 little songs, and so I respect the Minuteman. I didn't want to be too much Minuteman, so I thought if I remove the only Minuteman, which was myself, it's an unusual thing for me. I wrote it all on D. Boone's Telecaster, and I can't play guitar very well, but Tom Watson was very patient, and to learn it all, there's one solo he's got. All the rest, I would write him little melody lines and stuff, but I can't really do all that. I can't play with a pick. And then I put on a guitar with Tom in the practice pad, and with Raul, we worked out the drums. Because he can't play drums, but I have him try different things, and then according to his style, make it. Because I didn't want him to play stuff that was too unnatural for him. I wanted him to stretch, because he comes from hardcore, and good spirit and stuff, but not a lot of... experiment with approaches of time and phrasing and mm-hmm. stuff. But on the other hand, I still wanted it to be him.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Tom just... It was also a way I could, like, beat the riffs into Tom. One song, 2 minutes, but the rest about a minute and a half.
I remember Dave Grohl told me... I saw him at the Runaways premiere.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I did a tour with Watt, and we had to play his songs. He was... It was like, it was the hardest thing I've ever done musically. And I was like, I know I played a few Warped Tours with Watt playing his songs, you know, the Big Bang Theory and your tunes, you know? And how, you know, it was just a great lesson in musicianship, having to do something that you wrote, you know?
I think it's weird, maybe, for songs come from the bass, even though I did them on the guitar. And I did chords and stuff, but pretty palsy. They were beautiful two guys to do it. But anyway, this is recording. You can do things that you can't do at gigs. Like at a gig, I can't tell the people, hey, look, I'll put the bass on later. Okay, but that's what I was doing last week.
That's so bitching.
And now he's going to mix it July 11th.
Cool.
And it should be out in the fall.
Yay.
Yeah, it's a big deal for me.
It's so cool.
But, Yeah, so what you're doing now is...
Yeah, I'm just
you're dividing your music into, like, the passion part.
Yeah.
Which shouldn't have compromise. And you just,
no.
You just don't end it out. And then you do the other things, like the movie stuff and now this production thing.
And
that's,
bands.
That's
like,
new
I'll just,
for me. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And producing bands and producing records and making records and, you know, like E-Rock and Pete is, like, when I collaborate with people, that's all towards, you know, it's all stuff that we do and I try to make a living with and, you know, and then playing Lullabies, I get paid to do that. I'm going to do that with Tor Himes. He's a great jazz producer and piano player. Yeah, and Perry invites me every year and Tor to play the Kids of Palooza stage, which is really cool. And we do a thing where we play, and then I have my laptop and DJ at the same time while we're playing with a live band. Then I pull up kids on stage and have them strum. Because the mojo's there if the intention's right. That's what it's all about is intention, you know.
But you and Per do a duet?
No. He always plays by himself, and I do my trip. Yeah. He lets me do my trip, and I let him do his trip.
Ah, okay.
Because he's got, you know, we have Porno for Powers, even though we haven't played in a long time.
Yeah.
And but he's busy with Jane's Addiction right now, that's right.
Okay, yeah, but it, interesting, though, if Porno went and when they get going again. Yeah, because for me, it was great experience. I love that music.
Thank you.
And the gigs, and yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was a very positive thing. Of course, there was those nightmares and stuff, but when I look back, you know, I don't have a hard time with that being judgmental. I know that was a sickness, and to me, my time serving with that crew was beautiful because of the music and the passion that was put into the playing and the gigs, and it was just beautiful. And that's what I remember.
Me too.
I mean, there was weird stuff, but everybody got healthy later.
Mm-hmm.
God bless, you know.
Yeah.
It was trippy in a way.
Yeah.
Probably people couldn't believe it would happen.
Yeah.
You know,
I
always had faith in you guys. Uh-huh. I know it was a hard time and stuff, but I just knew you as all real good guys.
I never seen so many chicks on a stage before.
Oh, yeah. There was one period where the juice and clothes guy was asked to go out in the crowd to find people to be the choir. These dudes had never heard the songs. And I guess he would just pick them on how they looked. And Perry would be there with them like 5 minutes before we're going on stage trying to teach them the words. Our family. That was really incredible to do about my bass playing. I only got to do 2 songs because I was touring at the same time. But one was the title song, Got a Good God's Urge.
And mm-hmm.
It was the trippiest way I'd ever been learned a song. Because what Per did was he told me the story of this song. His pop, Peter's pop, very sick. And Peter asked God, look, save my pop, please, and I'll, you know, do what you want. And then it went into another part where they're surfing. And there's like a, you know, the feeling of like a shark or something being a hard charger. So he mixed these two kind of emotion states in one song, set up the kick drum under in the kitchen, the kick drum's under the chow table. Peter had a guitar like this one here. They just start going for it. It was like, wow. And so, you know, I got the bass there, and we do this song in the kitchen just like that, without prac or anything. And there comes a part when it goes into that shark surfing part. Well, the band just stops. You know, play something there. And so I just thought of a lick in the middle, and the whole band jumped on. And the eye contact, I'd never really been in this situation before, not even with the Minutemen, where the eyes were so strong. Everybody's looking at you, looking at. And I've never had been connected. A lot of lessons from that experience, being with Porno, I've used ever since in my other bands and stuff.
That's heavy.
Then the other one was 100 Ways. And that was more like the track was already done, and I just played bass to it.
Yeah.
TJ was engineer. But the Good God was just made in the moment.
Yeah.
And from the story.
That's righteous, because that's such a bitchin' tune.
It is, but I mean, I had never been a part of the music made like that, where you just, the guy tells you, because it wasn't just notes and putting little tricks together. No, it was a sincere story, and then all come together to make the tune.
It was beautiful.
It was very emotional for me and stuff, and so I pulled in my, I didn't know where it was going exactly, so I listened to his singing. The melody line, Peter was strum, jump, 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 good God. And so I just kind of made the bass line to the singing. I didn't know where it was going. You know, so they totally led me there and put me there. And I let go of all my, like, oh, what's it supposed to be in all this? No, let it go. Let these guys show you, learn you. Go on with them. You know, and it was beautiful for me.
I've used that experience
all through my other band since, and that was very, very profound. It's like going back to a Minutemen days kind of feeling when I did that song with you guys.
Yeah, well, that song to me was the only, at that point, when I think about the whole time up there, 2 years, 6 months,
yeah,
there was one jam that you and I and Perk did alone.
Oh, yeah.
Blood was falling from my finger from going nuts. And then that song, recording that song in that, and I remember that. And then also doing Bally Eyes in my bed. With a nylon string like I have right now, but
wow.
But we should play Good God's Earth.
Yeah, play it.
You want me to play it?
No, I don't have a bass here.
Should I play it acoustically?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Itching. Yes, righteous. Beautiful.
Those are fun days.
Yeah, profound on me. Thank you, Peter. Yeah, we're at the end of the first hour of Watt Pedro Show, July 27th. No, June. Getting ahead. June 27, 2010. Hold tight for hour two. June 27, 2010. Your second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. We're on the track.
that's right. Yeah. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I need some more. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Don't ask what for. Standing here like a loaded gun, I'm ready to go off. I've got nothing to do but shoot my mouth off. So gimme,
you already told me all the team.
to Perks and back.
Watt from Pedro Show. Let's see, that chunk of music there following the Spin Cycle, Brother Matt, collaborate with Peter DiStefano with the baseball bat neck BS-335.
Cool.
You've had it 2 months.
Yeah. Gibson made it.
And you put up all the bones.
Well, yeah, they gave me free guitars, but this one was a custom shop one, and so I had to help with the craftsmanship and paying the people to build it and the wood and all that stuff. So
it's pretty.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a 1959 reissue.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, it's just
tobacco.
Great. Yeah, I like it because it's the most versatile guitar. I can get the most like acoustic then to like a Les Paul then like a Strat. You know, just with the knobs, you can clean it up and then get it dirty and
knob it up.
Use a lot of effects.
Just a wah-wah and a distortion box.
Oh, cool.
Or it's a tube screamer.
Yeah.
I have an S tube screamer and a wah-wah. I don't even bring a tuner.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you these songs we just heard. The Monkees Are in Charge by Kosto Glotov. They're from England. Maybe he's emigrate. Immigrate. Ain't I great? No. I'm retarded. Then there's a band from Finland called Kakao Kam Kami. And their song, Half Man, Half Bono.
It's good.
Trippy.
Yeah.
And it's instrumental. Mm-hmm. So I guess they leave it to your imagination. You want to make of that. And then we heard Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. Black Flag.
Cool.
Composition covered like country western. And Kira singing it.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah, trippy. I was on... it's a new EP came out where this cat named Evan... drummer man, and hey, let's do Black Flag songs like they were country songs. I was on a six pack, I think.
Cool.
Dezo. And then we heard The Crabs with Me and My Girl, We're Gonna Go Surfing, and they're from Ireland.
Cool.
And then Nei Denti.
Denti.
Huh? Yeah, maybe no teeth.
Something about the teeth, yeah.
Nei Denti.
Italiano, his name is Matteo Benici.
Wow.
And he's a cello player, but also bass player. He was in town with Sugoti when I played with them in Long Beach and Echo Park. And a great cat. Yeah, they live a little north of Firenze. Neo Pisano? Penzano? It's a little village, Tuscany. Cool. Beautiful. You know, the Renaissance paintings, and you see the backgrounds? Mm-hmm. You know, the hills and the farms and the fields. It's just like that.
Yeah,
it's incredible. You know, see, I've seen this. And this is their backyard. You know, it's out there. Very, very beautiful. I did a radio show in the pad. The pad is 200 years old.
Oh,
the kitchen was this size.
Wow.
Big guy.
Do you do radio shows when you're away from each other?
Yeah.
On the lap,
you can do it on tour.
So
I started doing it. I like them best with Brother Matt, but I'm on tour, and otherwise, be big gaps. And that's what used to happen in the old days. So now I try to fill in the gaps with touring with the remote shows. But one good thing is I can have guests like these cats, Matteo and two other guys in the band, Sigoti, Jacopo, and Andrea. And they made me big old chow. We were chowing it while we were doing the show.
Yeah. Sort of like we're doing with this pizza. Yeah. Right? Well, thank you so much for inviting me, bro. This has meant the world to me.
Oh. What about it? Do you ever get asked advice about music?
Advice from people?
Yeah, maybe young people wanting to get into music. And they ask you for advice. If that ever happened, can I ask you?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to young people wanting to get into music?
To be honest, whatever you do, just be honest in your delivery. Find out what you really are and what you really want, and then it doesn't matter what the notes are, how many notes, the technique will follow the expression of what the truth is. If it's chaos, buzzing, butterflies in your stomach, you'll play a bunch of notes to get that out. If it's peace, you'll do these beautiful sounds, you know. But if you really want to, like, learn and master people like Segovia or Beethoven or Bach, then you go to school and you go and you learn how to read and you do all that and you do techniques and stuff. But you know, I would say just honesty. Honesty, honesty, honesty. And with your instrument. Now, you don't have to go out and get yourself destroyed in life, honestly. But, you know, when you pick it up, just be real. And that's what it is, I think. You know, and then people ask me, how do you play outside and how do you play all these weird notes and the scales and stuff? And you can't play out unless you've been out. You know, when I was in a mental ward or addicted to heroin or, you know, it's like falling down a flight of stairs. If you understand discordance, really, the truth, then any note will work. Like when you pick up the guitar, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what notes I play. They all work because there's only 12 notes, and I've experienced all parts of those. I've earned the right to be able to play 12 notes as opposed to a fixed thing that is right and wrong. And I believe wrong is beautiful. That is life. So I purposely play the wrong notes because I'm wrong. I'm making bad decisions. I'm texting wrong. You know, I end up in a mental ward. You know what I mean? I'm doing bad decisions. I'm selfish, self-centered. I lie, I cheat, I steal. And so I learn through agony and pain from doing these behaviors. And then good things happen to bad people, you know, and bad things happen to good people. You know, the kids getting sick and stuff. And the world's a trip, and I don't get it, you know.
It's a discordant life.
Yeah, but it's a happy life, too. But, I mean, if you want to get into playing outside, you got to understand agony and pain and fear and loss. And that's all it is. It's fear and loss and pain and being wrong. I'm a wrong guy, so I can play wrong notes, you know.
We need to talk to you about that.
Yeah?
What? Interviews.
Oh, okay.
What about songwriting? Has that changed for you over the years?
Yeah, it's really weird when people try to pinpoint me in a thing. You should be an acoustic thing or, you know, Sanctuary saying, yeah, we're going to make you more like a John Mayer type, or, you know, get you in this Jack Johnson type of thing, and they'd have me open up for Jack Johnson. And I go, okay, I'm coming with my acoustic, and I'd show up with an electric guitar, tons of distortion by myself, and just feedback, burning incense. You know, I always just, as soon as someone says you should do this, I want to do the different. And I don't know if that's because I'm mean and selfish and self-centered and want to be a punk or Dennis the Menace, or if it's really I just don't want to be one thing. I want to be the best classical guitar player. I want to be the best jazz guitar player. I want to be the best punk rock, blues, and stuff like that. And I can't do that. And I know I'll never do that. And so I'm bummed, you know? And I don't want to just stick in one style. Because as soon as I stick in one style, I go, oh, my God, I love that other style. Oh, my God. And so I wish I could only just be like a blues guitar player or a, you know, like master one thing. But I'll always love everything. You know, yeah, it's real, you know?
No, Peter, songwriting.
Oh, songwriting.
Has it changed for you?
Yes.
How you did it. Remember you telling me about those Love is a Magnet?
Yeah, yeah.
Has it changed from those days to now, how you write and sell?
Yes. Yes. I'm more of like when I write now, I used to just think of the guitar chord structures.
Yeah.
And then I'd look at like Perry and other people to do the other parts, like the words and stuff like that. Now I look at everything, the drums, the bass, the guitar, the words, the poetry, the meaning, the tones, the mixing, the mastering, the amp, you know, all that stuff, because I'm making records all by myself. Like that song that we played,
yeah,
was all done, you know, and I have this little Yamaha drum
pad. What do you come up
pad,
with first?
And it depends. Usually a click of what
click
the speed
first.
Is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, words. All the words is usually first. Like,
oh, really?
Oh my God, I'll have this words. And I'll go, what is the speed of how I want to express these words? And then I'll find a click, and I'll pick up a guitar and jam to it, or a bass. Guitar, bass to the click. And then when I get a thing, then I'll get my drumsticks out on this little Yamaha pad thing that has drum sounds.
Yeah.
And I'll go, you know, and I'll do a...
Beat it out.
Yeah, I'll do like a four on the floor, and then this. Yeah. And then I'll start... Mitch Mitchell is my favorite drummer, and John Bonham to hold down the four to floor. But I loved how Mitch Mitchell just kept adding notes and doing twirls and
showing everything he
did. But the good news about that is that, because we can do this garage band thing where we grab pre-done drums, and everything just sticks the same, and there's no
loops.
So I'm trying to do purposely out of quantized, out of tune. I do flams on purpose. I'm trying to make it real because it's so not real. It's all just a computer. I'm doing it all on a computer.
So the last thing on his voice?
The last thing on his voice, and it's the least time I spend time on.
Yeah, but it's a trip because the first thing is the words.
The words, and then the last thing I do is I listen to the music, and then I just read off the paper.
So what you want to do, you want the music to be used to make those words into music.
Yes. Yes.
Music. The instruments to make the words into music.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the words like kind of give you a focus.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'll go through like.
Because you were talking about all these genres and stuff, but if you have a set of words, genre's not important. Whatever.
Genre's not important.
What other kind of vision or something you're getting from your spiel?
Yeah. 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 And if it's like if I'm singing about something, you know, a romantic experience at some kind of a place when I was dancing when I was young or whatever.
Down the hill here.
Into that style of music that was playing at that time. And then people go, oh, what are you doing dance music? Well, that's what was at, you know, when I met my wife at the club, that's what was playing was trance music, you know, so whatever. And then I'll do that kind of beat to do these words. And
yeah.
And then if it's a blues, like a feeling that I'm sad and I'm sorry or whatever, I have a tendency to go to blues riffs, you know, blues kind of riffs. And And if it's like bad boy behavior with sadness, then I get that kind of, like that last song I just played you. It was bad boy behavior with sadness from my consequences of what I've done.
Yeah.
So that's the song. That's the riff. Boom, boom, you know. Boom, boom. But I think that now that it's coming to me, I think I'm... No, wait, wait. Whatever it was. I can't remember. Yeah,
so it's blues.
Yeah, it's a 12-bar kind of thing, because it's a bluesy feeling.
Yeah.
But there's a wickedness to the riff, like a bad boy riff.
Right.
And so that fits with the words, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're right, Juan. I mean, you know me better than me.
When you think about today, what would you like to change about music scene?
And I'm not doing this to blow smoke up your butt because you put me on your show and because I love you and everything. But the truth is, study Mike Watts. Study how he lives, man. No, I'm telling you. I'm not going to say names, but there was a person who played Lollapalooza, and I heard it this morning that he had his wife and his two kids to get in a van with this rock star guitar player last year's Lollapalooza. And the guy was like, I don't drive with kids. And he had to have his own town car, made this whole scene. And it's people like that that make, or it's behavior like that, that makes the music business suffer. It should suffer. It should lose money. It should, you know, the stars should be scientists and doctors. And you know what I mean? People should be going after that. If a musician is humble, like Mike Watt, and lives humbly and is not worried about the fashion and the looks and the whole trip and the clapping and blowing smoke up your ass, you just want to get better on an instrument and make good music, then that deserves to be compensated for the work, the hard work, like a plumber, like a blue-collar musician should get paid. But this whole rock star thing, like they're gods and everything, and then they treat people like, I can't go in a car with you because I don't ride with kids and I deserve a limo and shit like that, that's bullshit, and that should be punished, in my opinion. So I like that the music industry is suffering because it's got too many phonies, faking dying, and I'm one of them. So I can't help dyeing my hair and shit, you know. And I just look at Watt, and I'm gray today, and I'm showing the gray, but it's hard, bro. It's hard. It's hard to be real.
It's all right to do all that shit, though. I mean, if you color your hair...
No, I'm not putting down color in my hair. For me, personally, I need to get into the music, to be honest. And I forget about it all, and I want a limo and a jet and a money and a fame and a fans and all that stuff. And I would be lying if I didn't say I wanted that first and foremost. But that's going to make shitty music, and what I really want is good music. And so what makes good music is follow what? Follow the jazz players, man, the people that were in the streets playing the clubs, people that didn't get a chance to get the money and the limos and the, you know. And there's people don't even work on their musicianship or vocabulary anymore. They stick to the same vocabulary that they had in the mid-80s. And they're now, and they're just concentrating on their stomach, abs, and their looks and all this shit. And then they're writing music that isn't as powerful as it was 20 years ago for them. And so I just want to get better. And I'm not, I don't know if I'm getting better or worse, but I sincerely want it. And so, you know, in honor of you, Watt, that was, you and my friend Tor, I shaved my head and showed gray to the world. You know, this is what I really am, a 45-year-old gray man who's been through shit, man. That's a pretty boy. You know, that I'm trying to make you all think I am, because I don't have faith that my music's good enough to sustain me, so I got to do some dye or some kind of wardrobe to make you guys think that I'm worth, you know, supporting me to do music. And that's bullshit, man. If it's not good sonically or emotionally when you hear it, then I don't deserve it, you know? And that's the support. But I'm learning that from you, Watt. You know, you're the leader of that. And that's why when we do Hell Ride, everyone screams, Watt. And you're the star of the band because you're the guy with your head down wailing.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Watt, thank you so much. It's an honor, Matt. Thank you so much, you guys.
Brother Twan, for coming by.
Thanks for coming by, bro.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And the third hour here, I got another Pinhead from Asia segment from Miss Pin.
Cool.
And so she's going to play a bunch of music. June 27, 2010. Hold tight for hour 3.
Okay, you're listening to the very special radio semi-program called Pinhead from Asia segment, episode number 5, brought to you by the Walt from Pedro Show. And I'm DJ Pinhead from Taiwan, bringing you songs forgotten, bands disbanded, musicians deceased or disappeared, unpopular pop songs and all things used in Asia. Nothing new, everything renewed, depending on your perspective. If this reminds you of a Chinatown punk shop you've been to, well, I don't blame you. Next, we have Guitar Wolf. With their version of Summertime Blues, first recorded by Eddie Cochran in 1958. Not Blue Cheer, though. Well, Blue Cheer's version was damn good. They did an ultra-excellent cover of Summertime Blues 10 years after the original was recorded. Billy, the bassist of Guitar Wolf, died at the age of 38, heart attack. Never too young to die for rock and roll, and death never gets old. What did the other members of Guitar Wolf wear for Billy's funeral? As usual, black jacket. Medulla is due next. Kick-ass crazy indie band from Osaka. The style is fusion of jazz and punk and rock, but, well, fusion sounds neutral. Come on, fusion is smart and mellow. That's not Midori. Schizophrenic, yes, that's where they are. They simply blend all sorts of contrasting elements and speed up everything they play out, so chaos is really what they're going for. The first time I saw their promo video 1 or 2 years ago, I was definitely amazed. Nothing sexier than a crazy screaming chick in a sailor suit. Black splatters all over her shirt and running around with a machine gun. And you absolutely have no freaking idea what the music is about because it was too fast and too busy. The pace is always weird. Well, Mariko. Mariko is their singer. What can you say about her? She's comical and iconoclastic in a cool way. So, enjoy your Midori. Chick singing Now I Give You Zelda. Listening to this lovely track by Japan's all-girl indie pop group Zelda, and the track is called Umetate. And now, what you're about to hear is a song called Celebration by the Punch of Milkshakes called Lizard. formerly known as Benito Cage. Lizer is also known as Momoyo the Lizer. Momoyo is the last name of a Lizer's lead singer, and they were formerly historically known as Benito Kage. It's kind of like Pin known as Pinhead, and Pinhead is actually Victoria, and people just refer her to Vic, but she keeps telling people that she's Pin, that kind of stuff, right? No, not really. Okay. The track is from Junopedia, first released in 1981. Now it's been reissued with bonus track with excellent packaging about a month ago. Real unique style, really unique. The songs they play are obscure but not hard to digest. It's just like any other great indie punk band of that era. So we've been playing a lot of Japanese indie stuff from late 70s to early 80s in the previous Pinhead episodes, right? We've been listening to Bajuga Bully, Jakatala, and maybe Friction 2. Well, Zelda. Zelda was actually popular during the same period of time as well. So next, I'll give you a few more truly outstanding but obscure Japanese indie stars to be heard and to be revived with the curse of Pinhead from Asia. I doubt it. First, I give you Inu, led by a singer Machida Ko, also known as Machida Machizo. Again, he's now a critically acclaimed novelist, a very eccentric and creative individual that he is. Let's give a listen to Tsuru Tsuru no Tsubo, which is my favorite track from Inu's masterpiece, Meshikuna. Catches witty, quirky, avant-garde-ish fun stuff. Let's just go with fun stuff. After that, I'll give you a few doses of Ishimaru, mainly tracks taken from his latest effort, an album called Unpop. Well, these musicians have one thing in common. They dig pop songs. That's the attitude. It's like, can't help it, I'm weird. This weird means pop. It's not normal, means cutting-edge experimental music.
as creating pop is the experimentation. Have you heard of Machida Ko's solo piece? It's like Machida, the gentleman in white ties and tails, piano and wine, and then the song is like If you do, then you know what I'm talking about. Okay, Hikashu is next.
Thank you.
Pinhead from Asia segment, episode number 5, could be the most talkative episode ever, brought to you by possibly the most talkative man you know from San Pedro. In case you're wondering how the hell I come up with the song list that I play for each episode, I just kind of randomly select stuff that I listen to, and I do listen to these stuff for the last maybe 10 years, I don't know. They might sound real obscure to you, right? But they must be something good in a way. Could be a very subjective way from my perspective, though. For example, I really like MSBR and Soulmania. Great noise. Damn good, but they are way out there. Uncomprehensible. Something like that does expand one's vision, though, but listening to these stuff really doesn't make me a much more fashionable music lover. That's not what I'm going for anyway. I just love them. Simple as that. I don't like it to hate music. Why would I hate music? Well, I just don't like how some people treat music as. I don't like how they do so, and I don't like why they do so. Music or noise, just love it. Doesn't need a cause and effect reasoning for that, which is always conventionalized and distorted. So, I'll see what I can play for MSBR. MSBR's Holy Mountain Electronics, MSBR, love it, big respect. Koji Tano, thank you so much, we love you to death. But I must say it's not something that you can listen to every day, and what could be something that I can listen to on an everyday basis? DRI, MDC, DOA, and No Means No. Never get sick of No Means No. And maybe Space Retro and Dope Smoker. And what's everyday life like? Got a shitty job and shitty life, putting out shitty noise recording and DIY releases. See, I listen to what you listen to, and I am just like you, most of you. It's a slice of life feeling that we get here, but there's the other side of life and music. It's something cruel and something dark, something incomprehensible, which is what I'm sharing with you through the music I play and you listen. Quite unfortunately, sharing is the real brutal part, isn't it? The real brutal nature of Pinhead from Asia, huh? So, do not panic. Okay, Anarchy is next. No Shutters Fight. songs I'm going to play to you and things I'm about to explain to you will be something that elevates my idea of sharing music with you to a higher degree. Sometimes songs are meant to be listened by those who are estranged to the language, time, place, and stories told in the songs. Sometimes we need estrangement to get new meanings of words and to have stories passing on, or to have songs being heard again and again. So, strangers, sometimes I need you, sometimes you need me. Small narratives are something capable of slipping out of rules, of pinning down another bunch of rules, and they are capable of slipping out from meaning, signifying another meaning. A beautiful folk song is like that. It's the singing of nature's experimentation, which is still nature. Here I give you a song written by the Mother Nature, a story about an island that doesn't have a name, but a description, which is beauty. And Mother Nature's voice is whispering the words I know. They are the things I like in my childhood. They are buffalo, rice, banana, and magnolia. History begins with dates and ends with killing, like a song that was not heard or heard distorted. It's like hearing these strange words to your ears, and they are 水牛、稻米、香蕉、玉兰花。
他们一再重复的叮咛，不要忘记，不要忘记，他们一再重复的叮咛。 比如蓝绿一起山林，婆娑无边的太平洋。 怀抱着自由的土地，温暖的阳光照耀着高山和田园。我们这里有勇敢的人民，比如。 蓝绿一起山林，我们这里有无穷的生命，水牛、稻米、香蕉、玉兰花。
转眼已成冬，匆匆，匆匆，一年容易又到头，朝光逝去无影踪。人生本有尽。 宇宙永穷，匆匆匆匆，匆匆为后人乘凉。 要学我们老祖宗。人生啊，就像一条路，一会儿西一会儿东，匆匆匆匆。赶路人，珍惜光阴莫放松，匆匆匆匆，莫等到了尽头，望叹痴心成空。人生啊，就像一条路，一会儿西一会儿东，匆匆匆匆。人啊，就像一条路，一会儿西一会儿东，匆匆匆匆，匆匆匆匆。
That was Hu Defu. And next we have Ajiko. Ajiko is this song three piece consists of singer Uwa and also Benji from Blanket Jet City and also Tokyo that plays bass. Since it's more like a side project to the members, so I guess it's reasonable that they only released one full album so far. It's called Fukamidori. That means deep green.I used to listen to Fukamidori constantly while taking trains, just some listening while seeing the moving landscape outside the window of the train, seeing deep green fields and clear blue sky, just typical Southern Taiwan landscape. Seeing that and listening to Fukamidori, it's full of flowing sounds and fast movement, but it's really a beautiful, peaceful moment to me. Unfortunately, the green field no longer exists, not like before. Great flood occurred in Southern Taiwan last year.All you see is muddy ground. A lot of farmers are still quite reluctant to plant something on their field. They would rather just scatter around some seeds and let it grow free. And doing that actually allowed them to apply for funding money to get by. I can understand that, but it's not gonna do any good to the soil and the fields. So all there is to see are things in your memories and books you read. It reminds me of a poem by Arthur Rimbaud called Sun and Flesh.Well, metaphorically, your mind's gonna be a great painter too, 'cause that deep green takes a lot of layers to paint and to parse into your memory. That deep green deserves it. Here's Ajiko's Fukamidori, a beautiful track called Hado. it's almost the end of the fifth episode of Pinhead from Asia segment. I'll give you a song by Clipper, not Clippers from Los Angeles. Clipper, 夹子电动大乐队, this extravagant Taiwanese indie pop phenomenon, combining electronic music with oddball eccentric parodies of Taiwan's low culture. It's like, if you're a Taiwanese kid growing up in 70s and 80s like me, it's highly possible that you learn what electronic music is from either A, stripper dance showcase at all kinds of temples festivals, or B, stripper dance showcase at Taiwanese traditional wedding ceremonies, which are usually big block parties. Clipper kind of plays tribute to that. Well, hell to our everyday shady life. Here is 夹子电动大乐队.
I want to thank Ms. Pin for Pinhead from Asia segment number 5 there. We've reached the end of the June 27, 2010 Watt from Pedro show. I want to once again thank Mr. Peter DiStefano making a hell ride from Camarillo to Pedro here in Love Grotto at Pleasure Point. Brother Twan, thank you too.
Thank you,
Brother Matt, most essentially, and Ben is, of course, as always, keep your powder dry. Yeah.